Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
I remember once when I was a boy, and I probably was around the age of 10 or 11, I'm going to guess. And I wouldn't eat my liver. I mean, what I was served for dinner. What a way to start a talk. Now, my mind wants to talk about liver for a while, but I won't. I'll simply say that I was banished from the dinner table because I simply wouldn't put that in my mouth. And as such, I was sent upstairs to go to my bedroom and think about what a willful child I was. And I remember as I was mounting the stairs, and I can still see the kind of green carpet that was on the stairs and the banister headed up, and the little right turn that it made from a landing that opened up into a bigger landing where the various bedrooms had their entrance to. And I remember thinking how unfair it was, and I was completely, completely captured in a certain set of thoughts about what was wrong with people, you know, parents. You know the drill if you were ever a boy or a girl. And I made the left turn to enter into the room where my older brother and I shared a room. And as soon as I started to turn into that dark room, I heard a werewolf. I heard a monster. To this day, I tell you, I think I heard a werewolf. I went downstairs much faster than I went upstairs. And I went running into the dining room where they were still eating the unmentionable. And I told them that there was a monster in my room. Now, I know that it sounds stupid, but when you're 10 or 11 years old, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 42, 61, that when you're a boy or a young girl, the mind is so given to flights of fantasy, and there's so much darkness in the world that perpetuates those kinds of terrible pictures, that it was as real as it could possibly be. Now, just a little insight. The scariest thing that I ever saw in my whole life. Did you ever see like the original werewolf with Lon Chaney? And he comes over. There's this ledge, and some stupid Englishman is wandering around on the moors at night. First of all, why are you doing that? Why is anybody out in a foggy moor at night? Makes no sense if you think about it. Would you be out there? You hear a howl, you go, what's that? Who says what's that and then goes sees? And he's out there wandering, and all of a sudden this, and they didn't have makeup, you know, in those days of the early movies, the monsters were, they looked kind of stupid, but this thing was, I remember to this, I can still see it in my mind's eye. And that picture had been in this boy's mind, and he heard something upstairs, and he ran downstairs certain that he had heard and even seen something of a monster. And my parents, being somewhat willing to educate me properly about such things, did what a father would do, and he took me upstairs, turn on the light in the hall, turn on the light in the bedroom, and went from closet to underneath the bed into the bathroom, pulled back the shower curtain to prove to me that what I had imagined being in the room wasn't there. And he made sure that I understood that monsters don't exist. Now, I want you to understand something that you've forgotten, even though as a child you were probably given a similar lesson. Monsters don't exist. Monsters do not exist. Now, I'm talking about something in particular here. And what I'm talking about is the monster of anger. The monster of fear. The monster of doubt and of worry and of self-loathing. The monster that appears in the human mind to be as real as anything can be when someone sees someone doing something monstrous. Have you ever seen somebody do something that was such in such bad taste or that was so dark and so negative that in the moment that you saw it, the only thing that you were aware of inside of yourself was a monstrous feeling? Do you remember these things? What we're going to do tonight is we're going to help ourselves in a way that the only way that a man or woman can be genuinely helped. And that is that we're going to discover in our own minds the monster-making machinery that produces the image, the sensation, the fear, and everything that keeps that in place. Because unbeknownst to us, and it's critical that we do understand this, because I want you to understand something. You will never be free. You will never be free as long as you believe in monsters. You will never know what it's like to be a human being that doesn't walk around waiting for the other shoe to drop and the fear that follows it, so that then you lose yourself to whatever the condition is that's come along and shown you something that has taken your life away from you. I'm telling you, you better listen to what I'm saying. It is hardwired into the mind of the human being at this point in our so-called evolution. It is part and parcel with the way the system, the society, the culture, everything about the world around us produces day in and day out the invisible mechanism that supports the idea inside of a human being that there is something fearful, that something must be feared. You don't know how pervasive it is, because every single day it's part of your daily fare. You pick up a newspaper. Hidden heart disease. Are you at risk? You don't think to yourself when you see a headline like that that there's somebody or something putting into your mind a fearful image by which then you can see a monster and then make plans to slay it by doing this, that, or the other. It's not part of the way you see life. You see a headline. How safe are your children? It never occurs to you that someone has just stuck a certain kind of knife right into your mind, so that now your mind starts to dwell on, and there are human monsters. Let's get this clear. I'm not talking about the kind of monsters that we can see at large in this world. And by the way, the monsters that we see at large in this world are part and parcel there because of the way in which we've handled the world up to this point. How about a headline like, "Has someone stolen your identity?" You see a magazine front, "Someone stolen your identity." You tell me what happens in the moment when you see headlines like that, when you read things such as I've stated. I'll tell you exactly what happens. a monster appears in your mind. Instantaneously. And the moment that the monster appears in the human mind as a projection of that individual's conditioning, meaning his or her experience and his culture, her social system up to that point, the minute the monster appears, game over. Because now the mind sees the monster. Meaning now the mind sees the image with the fear in it. And once the mind sees the image with the fear in it, the only thing the mind can do is do what? It takes the image to be real. Because the system is flooded chemically, literally, at that point with all kinds of elements that make the body actually experience the presence of the imagined monster. And human beings are so asleep to this condition because it's a powerful stimulus to the human being. Powerful stimulus. Human beings are part of a strange psychosis now, the human being, where the mind produces first an image of something fearful, and then the mind, disconnected from its own activity, starts to fear the image it has placed in its own mechanism. Once it begins to fear it, it must protect itself from what it has seen. And once it begins to feel in jeopardy and that it must protect itself, then anger and all other irrational states follow that behavior. And everything the human being does and becomes after that justifies the existence and proves the validity of what that mind has imagined into itself of itself. And no one sees it. No one sees it. So what we're after here is to discover for ourselves that we don't need to have powers and possessions, and we don't need the relationships that we run to in order to save us from whatever happens to be chasing us at the moment. That all of the things by and which a human being spends his or her life, literally in the endless pursuit of until the day they die, amulets. What do you think the idea of having a lot of money is? What do you think all of the things that a person does and pursues with their life, what do you think that's about? Isn't it because if they can have this, if they can possess this somehow or other, they're going to be safe from whatever it is that's causing them the pain they're in? Such a mind can never be free.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
The mind that fears can never be free as long as it believes in the fear that it creates. It can never be free. It can only find other ways to deal with the fear, which keeps the nature that produces the fear alive. So, I want you to I want you to follow my thinking. I want you to listen to what I'm going to say, because I'm going to show you some things that will help you see some things about what you presently don't see going on in you. You know, it's hard when you tell a child there's no monsters, because the child has a child's mind. It has a feeling, it has an image, it has the experience and the remembrance. And for the child, that's all there is, meaning that the body of experience that that child has relative to that which frightened it, that's overwhelming to that child. What else would the child have to look at in order to gauge something? The parent says there is no monster. The child knows there's a monster. And the child can't be reasoned with, because the mind of the child is still at such an immature place that it literally is still formulating various images by which to even define itself. So it can't receive the kind of information. But at a certain point, a man or a woman in this life has to look out and see unequivocally that everything that's wrong in their lives, and I mean that, everything that's wrong in our life has to do with a monster that we fear one way or the other. Proof. Do any of you do anything against yourself? How many of you are wasteful? And I know you are. How many of you have enemies? I know you do. How many of you think bad thoughts about yourself? I know you can't stop it. You can sit and make a list for yourself, and what you'll discover is every one of those activities is predicated on a certain idea inside of the human being that what he or she is dealing with is something outside of themselves that is oppressing them, that threatens them, that may take something away from them, that's somehow going to impact their life in a negative stance. So therefore, they must be proactive. They must do something towards that which approaches them. Because if I don't do something towards that person who said this, I heard them say something about me. If I don't do something about that, that thing's going to grow out of control and I will lose whatever it is that I think I'm going to lose. And you begin to see something that's very important when it comes to learning to be free of the interior monsters, these negative thoughts and feelings, and that is the following. Have you ever... We always talk about this. Do you ever watch Mother Nature at work? I do. I love watching nature. I watch, for instance, today, and it's always this way. A certain time of the year, the juncos are a little bird, a little tiny blackhead, small bird. The juncos start to come back, and when they do, it's usually the males. And when the males first come back, they're basically looking for some kind of territory, and looking for territory, they'll try to claim it. And any other little junco, any other little fellow with a little black head that's in the way, is an adversary of you. And so they'll be feeding, and all of a sudden, two juncos will go at it, you know, right up in the air, like that. And they're really at it, and then they land just next to each other, and they eat again. Because it was resolved. The turkeys of darkness, that's what I've named the three toms now that wander on the turkeys of darkness. These toms, these big toms, now all of a sudden here comes a flock of new chicks, not quite chicks, they're like pullets, they're maybe 12 inches, they're small. They come running in, the big toms don't want the pullets. They puff up, they chase the little turkeys, running away, and within a second, it's done. Turkeys go back to eating, the pullets come back, just like nothing happened. God forbid one of the ground tree squirrels should be in the same path as of feeding as one of the hens, one of the hens. And all of a sudden, and they're really funny. I love watching that. The ground tree squirrel jump at the turkey. Now the turkey's, 50 times the size of the squirrel. Turkey will whoop, fly up in the air like something's after it. And then it'll come down, it'll puff up and chase the squirrel. The squirrel will go up in the air. So like this kind of this jumping jack thing going on there under the bird feeders. But as soon as the jumping jacks are done, all the conflict is over. And you can see it in nature. A storm blows in, a massive storm, blow everything around. As soon as the storm's passed, conflict's over. But not with human beings. You can't live presently the nature you live from. It can't live without something to be upset about. It always has someone that didn't do it right, someone who isn't saying the proper things, something that isn't quite in its proper place. It doesn't matter what it is. There's always something that's inside of the human being tearing at him, tearing at her. Until when that monstrous presence of that conflict inside of the human being finally causes the person to produce some action to get rid of this or change that. And then maybe things get smoothed out for a minute, but no more does it get smooth than the whole thing goes right back into the same system. And even the same person that you reached resolution with, the resolution's over and you're back as an enemy of theirs. How many of you know this? Why does that conflict go on? Why, when everywhere you look, even in nature, which, by the way, has quite a bit of violence in it, even in nature, the conflict comes to an end. Why doesn't it come to an end in a human being? And the answer is that the human being has a feature that no other creature has. And the feature that a human being has that no other creature has, and that which keeps these creatures from remaining in conflict but keeps the human being always stuck in some kind of rut wherein they're just run around and run around, is that human beings have imagination. A human being can imagine something. When I say that a human being can imagine something, that means that one feature of the human mind is its ability to take an experience, whether it's intellectual, emotional, physical, or all of those things at once, and it can take that and it can create out of its own substance that which represents what happened. So imagination is a power by which a person can actually see with thought that which thought has produced to represent the experience. But the mind that imagines such things doesn't know that what it imagines is part and parcel with the nature that imagined it. Because when a person imagines an enemy they have, they don't know that what they're looking at is something that their mind has fabricated from an experience, from the stuff of their own mental life. Because the self that looks at an enemy in their mind doesn't see their own mind as being the source of their enemy. What they see is the image of the enemy, and they believe that the image is different than that which imagined it. And no such distinction exists between the mind that imagines something and the experience that comes from living it. No such distinction exists. I want to ask a question. If you saw somebody and they were walking down the street, and all of a sudden you looked around and they were like, oh my God, did you see that? And you look around, you don't see anything. You go, what? You didn't see it? You know, oh, there it is. And you're standing next to him. You go, what? He says, right there. Look at it, it's horrible. What's horrible man? It is. What is? It's like an old rabbit in Costello. That. What's that? There it is. And you don't see it. Now, what do you know about a person like that? You don't want to get in this, do you? Are they well? How do you know they're not well? How do you know they're not well? They're seeing something that isn't there. That's a form of madness, isn't it? To see something that isn't there that scares you? You don't want to go here, do you?
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit GuyFinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit GuyFinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
Well, what happens when you see something that someone has done to you after they're not even in the room anymore with you? What are you looking at? Where's the monster? Who made it? What keeps it alive? What is it that's keeping the conflict that may have existed in a moment between two individuals with disparate ideas about something? What is it that keeps that conflict alive? What is it that's keeping your self-pity going? What is it that allows that fear to breed and find new ways to empower itself at the cost of your own promise? What is it's going on? Because that's what we're talking about. Human beings, silly children, running around all the time trying to figure out how they can get something, how they can straighten someone out, how they can do something about this situation that took place yesterday or 50 years ago or that may take place tomorrow. All this energy and time spent in pursuit of trying to make a monster that is imagined into a monster that is slayed by an imaginary dragon slayer, someone who finally gets past the problem by killing what is it, the way of it, and all of it for nothing. All of it, I might add, keeping this world such a sorry place, and let me be real personal with you, and keeping you such sorry human beings, so preoccupied with anything and everything other than what you need to be preoccupied with. The pursuit isn't ways in which for you're going to become stronger than what frightens you, how you're going to get past that conflict that either was yesterday or you fear may come tomorrow. The completely different thing has to take place in the mind as it starts to see how it's making for itself what it does. So take a deep breath, because I'm going to tell you a story, a fun story, that will help you understand some of this a little bit more deeply and what it is that's necessary if you're going to begin to become a spiritually mature human being. Do you know that a spiritually mature human being does not cause any other human being pain? Ever. A spiritually mature human being does not trouble himself or herself over the trouble of others. A spiritually mature human being understands what immaturity is. And just as a significant parent looks at a child that's suffering from an illusion, an imagined monster, the spiritually mature human being also understands that other human beings who have not yet understood life are filled with monsters, and they don't hate the ones who have monsters. Do you know that you hate the ones who have monsters? And do you know why you hate people who have monsters in their lives? Because when they're afraid of the monster and they express their fear as a way to get away from it, it awakens that part of you that creates of them the same thing that you want to get away from them for. Don't you see where the only hope can possibly be, the only hope there can ever be for a human being and for this planet, is when individuals finally get to the point where, and now we'll have the story. Here's a man, and he was working late at his office in a relatively decent part of town. Nothing dangerous for sure. And his house was in a little suburb section, maybe 2 miles away from where he worked. But as he still, as often when he knew he was going to work late, he would get in his take his car because he didn't want to walk home at 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock at night. It wasn't necessarily wise, and it wasn't expedient because he had to get up in the morning. Well, he went downstairs, and he got in the garage. And he got in his car, he turned on the key. Have you ever turned on your key and it goes click, 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 like that? By the way, try to notice that a monster appears when you hear the click, 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 click. We'll get to that. Does it again, click, 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 click. And his mind starts. This stinking car. And it's like a nice car, you know, this stinking car. Oh, I knew I should have got that other car. And his brain begins to go into a certain kind of mode, and his mind's thinking, and then tries it again, and then he slams the dashboard thinking maybe that'll make it work. And it doesn't. And he knows better than to go open the hood. So he gets out of the car, and I'll ask you a question. Does he close the door nice and calmly, gently, or does he slam the door? Which is it? What does he do? Why does he slam the door? Because it's a stupid car. It's a stupid car. What I'm saying to you is that in his mind, the pain that he has is due to this car. Not to what his mind is telling him about the situation, what it's showing him, but rather the car itself is the problem. He slams the car door. And this always happens. And when he slams it, his briefcase pops open. I love this. Now, what happens when his briefcase slams, when a briefcase pops open after he slams the car door? What does he do? Flimmin', and he has a fit, doesn't he? Because now the whole thing is the fault of the gas station attendant who didn't do the proper thing when he was there 14 days ago or whatever it was. And now his mind's on broil. He picks up his stuff and he looks at his pants, and his pants now have dirty knees where he kneeled down to pick up stuff. Stupid garage man. Now, what kind of man is this at the moment? Man or monster, by the way? Monster. Starts walking home. Doesn't get too far when he comes across a certain parking lot area next to a big market of choice. Nice big market. And you know nice big markets, you know how they have the place that the big trucks pull behind where they unload the produce and stuff like that. And here comes an elderly man. And it's a warm night, and he's got a sleeveless T-shirt on, but he's well-groomed, his gray hair is nicely kept, and he's carrying a pair of grocery bags like this. And the man in our story notices this, and he thinks to himself, his mind is running over stuff. Well, I guess the old fellow just waited till it cooled down so he could go buy his groceries. And he watches the old fellow start to walk across the front of the parking lot, front of the market, and then make a right turn into the alley. And where he's going the other way. But he notices as soon as the old fellow makes a right turn in that little alleyway towards the street, all of a sudden, out of the darkness, as though they just appeared, it was a little strange, two very queer-looking lizard-like imps. Just you've seen. Have you ever seen the movies where the thing comes out? There's the shadow, and then all of a sudden, you sort of something emerges from the shadow. These things, lizard-like imps, just emerge right out of the shadows, and they're standing. They're only about 2 feet tall, and they're standing directly in front of the old man with the two shopping bags, and the fellow that's watching this has trouble believing what he's seeing, because when was the last time you saw two lizard-like imp creatures come out of the shadows and stand in front of an old man carrying bags? You didn't. And he'd never seen it either. But it caught his complete attention. And several things were going on, and I really want to put this in the story, even though it's not very important. Have you ever seen something and you know when you see it, you ought to go do something about what you see, but you don't? Same thing happened in him. He was interesting, but he knew he should go look and see what this was, because this was clearly out of the ordinary. But he was kind of frozen in his place. Now, why was he frozen in his place? What was he seeing? Was he seeing actually what was taking place there, or was he seeing something that his mind had already begun to weave as a possibility of something that he needs to protect himself, so he mustn't get involved, he mustn't go over there? Okay. And as he's watching, the old man turns and starts to walk the other way with the grocery bags, which seems to be an intelligent thing. But as soon as he does, these little lizard-like imp things, they run around and get in front of him the other way. But as they run around, they double in size. Now they're about 4 feet, and the fellow watching this thing is really strange. Now the old man, he hears the old man say something and swing his bags at these little lizard-like imp things. And each time he swings the bag at these little lizard-like imp things, they double in size. Each swing, double again. Each swing, double again. And this fellow sitting there watching, he's astonished, because it isn't but 8 or 10 swings when all of a sudden this man has in front of him and behind him two huge dragons. Horrible red eyes, lots of horns, teeth. You know what dragons look like? Big scaly faces. I imagine it and I get into character. And all of a sudden, one of them opens the mouth and the fellow can see fire in the mouth. In other words, what I'm trying to get across to you is things aren't getting better for this old man. And he's thinking to himself, should I go over there? Or should I go call the police? And he decides he thinks it's better to call the police. When the old man suddenly kind of shakes his head a little bit, puts the two bags down, walks over to one of the dragons, and says something to the dragon. The man can see the old man's mouth moving, says something to the dragon as he slaps the dragon's face. Now, our watcher, this fellow that's watching, thinks this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Wait, who slaps a dragon in the face? Are you kidding me? And when he slaps the dragon in the face, the one on the opposite side of him, it grows twice the size of the one that got slapped. But then that's not enough. The old man turns around and he slaps the one that was twice the size twice in the face and says something to him. At which point, the watcher, he all of a sudden sees both of these dragons. They tuck their big spiny tails beneath their legs. They shrink down back into little lizard-like imp things and disappear back into the shadows. Well, I don't have to tell you that suddenly our watcher, the man who was seeing this, now wanted to get as close as he could to this old man. He wanted to know what had happened. What did he see that had taken place? So he walks over to the old man and he said, look, I was watching, and of course, I couldn't get there in time. But I did happen to see what took place, and I want to know, what did you say to those creatures to make them slink back into the shadows? What did you say to them? And the old fellow looked at him. He said, oh, that. He said, well, actually, I wasn't talking to the monster. I wasn't talking to the dragons. The fellow was watching. He said, what do you mean you weren't talking to the dragons? I saw you. If you weren't talking to the dragons, who were you talking to? And the old man said, oh, well, I was talking to myself. He said, you were talking to yourself? What did you have to say to yourself that could have changed all that? And the old fellow said, oh, that. I said, wake up, man. You must be dreaming. That's what I said to myself. Wake up, man. You must be dreaming. And the fellow looked at him and said, I don't get it. What does your dream have to do with the dragons? What is you being dreaming? I don't get it. And the old fan said, look. He said, do you really think dragons exist? And the fellow said, well, why'd you slap it then if it doesn't exist? He said, well, that's simple. He said, because you see, prior to the moment I realized I was dreaming, the fear of the dragons kept it going. And so when I slapped it, it really got it irritated and it helped me see quicker that it wasn't really real at all.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks 4 times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
Now, I'm telling you some pretty big secrets, spiritual secrets. First, I'm telling you that any time that you're suffering over something that you've suffered over before, you're dreaming about monsters. Anytime you're worried, anytime you're frightened, anytime you're in a rush, anytime you're impatient, I want you to understand that all of those kinds of expressions that come into us have to do with a certain state that we don't see in ourselves, where just like the old man, all of a sudden appears the monster. I was trying to come up with a good way to express this idea to you, and this is what came to my mind. Have you ever seen the television programs or movies where the person has been accosted or he witnessed a crime, and he goes in the police station and there's a master sketch artist? I tell you that every time something happens, something as simple as your phone rings, can you come into my office, please? You're with somebody and they said, did you hear what so-and-so said about you? Or you can just be thinking to yourself, I wonder what's going to happen now when you start looking at it. And the minute that thought comes up, unseen inside of you appears a sketch artist. The mind instantaneously begins to draw out the dragon. It actually takes, and it starts with just a couple strokes, just, you know, broad strokes. And as the broad strokes come, meaning you begin to ponder the possibilities. You begin to taste the anger. Each stroke, the picture gets more complete. The more complete the picture becomes, the more certain the individual is that what he or she is looking at is real. And what I'm asking you to see is so simple to see in terms of understanding it intellectually, but to see it while it's happening is something else. Why would the mind produce, through negative imagination, something that frightens or troubles a human being? Why would the mind do that? And can you understand that that's what it does? When you're worried about something, when you're angry with someone, when something doesn't go right, whatever it is, That's a condition, man. Life has all kinds of things going on in it, and some don't go according to the way you have planned God's life for you. So when these changes take place, sometimes there is a natural conflict between one's preferences, one's wishes, one's designs. But because there's conflict between what life is saying is so and what you've wished, doesn't mean the storm has to be built into the perfect one that remains in place for the rest of your life. And what we're after is what's keeping that monster storm, that dragon there. And what's keeping it there is that one is identified with this monstrous idea, this feeling. It comes in and takes him over. I saw a great scene in a movie in The Edge, Anthony Hopkins and Alec Baldwin. This was very, very beautiful, very deep. They had been, if you never saw the film, stranded somewhere up in an Alaskan highland in the mountains there. And worse than that, a bear had eaten one of their friends, and it was a man-eating bear. They had no food. They had no compass except for one that didn't work the first time Hopkins tried producing it. And they had no hope of rescue because their plane had crashed someplace where no one was going to find them. It wasn't a really happy scene. And at some point, all of a sudden, there's a helicopter sound overhead. Oh my God, and they're looking for us. And Alec Baldwin goes running like a madman, running through these high reeds, trying to flag them down. And you know, especially that early in the movie, they're not about to be rescued. Helicopter goes on. Baldwin falls down on the ground and has a crying fit. Absolutely in a terrible way, and he gets up and he's filled with anger and all the rest of that. And right in the middle of his being caught in this monstrous state, Anthony Hopkins said, "Did you know you could make fire from ice?" Just like that. "Did you know you can make fire from ice?" Baldwin keeps going, and Hopkins says it again. "Did you know you can make fire from ice?" And finally, Baldwin really gets mad, because here's Anthony Hopkins. He's asking a practical question. He's not taken over by the fact that the plane went away. He says, and he lays into Hopkins. "You're this." He says, "You're the, you what, just the, what do they call it? Oh, making a decision tree, are you?" Meaning purely practical. And then Anthony Hopkins says something to him that you need to hear and understand. He says, "Yes, I guess I just don't have much of an imagination." Meaning, I guess I'm just not subject to the fearful pictures that are pushing you around right now and stealing from you the possibility of doing what's necessary and practical in this situation that we're in. Where was the monster? Where was the monster that Alec Baldwin was fighting with and hating Anthony Hopkins for his existence? Where was it? It was in his own negative imagination and nowhere else. And I'm saying to you that when you think about your life and you're not who you want it to be, and you feel that stab of pain, you need to say to yourself, "Wake up, man, you're dreaming." You get angry at somebody and your mind starts to run over a litany of reasons why you should lash out at them. You need to say to yourself, "Wake up, woman, you're dreaming." And the part about slapping the dragon in the face means that when you actually catch yourself in a state, when you catch yourself in this conflict that just keeps going, see, you don't get it. You don't get it. You think because there's doubt one day, and then because there's a couple good days where there isn't doubt in your life, that proves that somehow or other you've escaped the doubt monster. You haven't escaped the doubt monster. All your brain has done is put together a few hours of which you have a plan that saves you from the presence of your own negative imagination. Never knowing, by the way, that the negative imagination that's about to take you over is simply the opposite of the plan you had to protect yourself from it. We're not after that. Who wants a life that day in and day out is visited by angels and monsters? What we're interested in is understanding that this present nature of ours, our own mind, is continually working in an unseen way to produce those kinds of fearful pictures, those painful ideas, that broken relationship that it wants to run over one more time so that it can extract one more ounce of bitterness from what happened. That all of that working of the mind is for the purpose of something that dwells in that mind that does not care anything for the human being that it suffers. Nothing. Nothing. And only awakening to that changes it. You can't fight with an imagined dragon. You can't slay a monster that the mind produces by a tool the mind gives you to slay it with. Think about it. Where do you come up? Where the plans you have to overcome what overpowers you are coming from the mind that has imagined what's overpowered you. And it keeps that circle of self going and going and going. And so the man in the story, he said, "What? What do you mean you weren't talking to them? What do you mean? What do you say?" I said, "What do you?" I said, "Wake up, man. You must be dreaming." Oh, what a delight. What a treasure. What a gift. To actually understand that any time that you're willing to remember the truth, that when that dragon appears that first starts, and do you understand the point? First start a little lizard imp, meaning the first little thought about what he did or she didn't say or how come it didn't go. First little lizard imp. Little thing. And the little thing, you take a swipe at it. You know what it means? Take a swipe at it. I wish it wasn't happening like this. How come that has to go this way? Take a swipe at it. Each swipe increases the size of it. Why? Because you are adding dimension and depth to the thought that first started that. Each bit of attention you give to that kind of negative state enlarges the negative state. It doesn't make it more real, but it makes it more real for the one who imagines it's real. Do you understand that? And you look at, wake up, man, you must be dreaming. And then the part about slapping the dragon in the face, that's where you have to start bearing what happens when you don't defend yourself anymore. When you don't fight with them, when you don't fight with the dragon, when you don't run from the dragon, when you don't blame anything, because now you're just there with the imagined dragon and all of its terror that all of your life you have felt to be unescapable, the inescapable, all of that terrible state. Oh, I don't like this feeling. What's this feeling? And you want to fight with it. You want to get rid of it by blaming something, and you don't do it. You go instead. You wake up, man, you must be dreaming. And you bring yourself back. And for the moment that it takes, or however long it takes, that dragon, that's what it means, we slap him. You let that dragon be there without letting it drag you into its life. You don't let the dragon drag you into its life. Instead, you become conscious of its presence. And then it isn't a question of resolving the problem anymore. The problem is dissolved because you have seen through the mind that was producing it. You do the work to discover this for yourself, and you will become a true dragon slayer.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.